Blog Talk Radio.
Happens when I'm in the middle of trying to fucking catch up at the last second here to get everything ready for the entire show for you. Now I can say that's kind of done, sort of done, not really, but a little bit. We'll make it work. Okay, so a lot of stuff to talk about today. Obviously, we had a disastrous terror attack last night. I'll open up with that, and we'll get into a discussion here. I'll tell you all the facts that we have as of right now. It's brutal. It's brutal, so not going to be a fun show, or at the very least, it certainly does not start out that way. As we move along here, we have a bunch of stuff. There's a really sad story reported on in Politico yesterday. The RNC is now begging for money. They're just absolutely pleading with some billionaires, because Donald Trump is so disliked by other billionaires that they're trying to rely on specific ones in order to just pay their bills. So there's a lot to say about that one. Trump's VP pick, you know, we got a breakdown on him for you. We have Hillary Clinton and her devolving campaign. Wait until I get to the new goofy shit that she's doing. Wait until we talk about her new ad, her new anti-Trump ad. I couldn't have created an ad that would have been more of the wrong strategy. It's basically as wrong as you can possibly get. Those are strong words, but believe me, I'll break it down for you later. And some anti-atheist discrimination later on in the show. Even when it comes to marriage, atheists are having some issues in some places across the country. So we're going to talk about all that, and we're going to talk about much more. We got a very detailed Friday show here for you guys. So let's go ahead and get started here. And, of course, we will start with the disgusting news from last night. We had a disastrous terror attack yet again last night. This time it was in France. A truck plowed into crowds in Nice, France. These are people who were marching and celebrating Bastille Day. At least 84 people were killed. That's the number as I come live to you on air right now. There are 50 more that are in critical condition. So it's basically a guarantee that the 84 number goes up and might go up quite a bit. There are also 50 children who are hospitalized too. There are some reports that this attack was specifically of a family event. This was a family event. This particular area where people were marching on Bastille Day, it had families. It had little kids. 84 people killed. So cops eventually shot through the window of the truck that was running people over and killed the attacker. Those were the initial reports. Again, right before I came on air here, we're getting more and more information as time goes by. It usually takes 2-3 days to get everything really concrete and factual. But there are some reports earlier today that there was actually an exchange of gunfire, and it wasn't just shooting through the window, the cop shooting through the window that put this person down. There was actually a gunfight. And then also, local officials said that the truck was, quote, loaded with arms and grenades. So perhaps there was even more damage that was attempted to be done here. And some of them were apparently fake, though. So conflicted reports on that. I don't know if all the arms and grenades were fake or if it was just some of them. Well, obviously it wasn't all of them because they're saying there was a gunfire. There was some gunfire back and forth at this point. So an absolutely grotesque terror attack. We actually have identified the terrorist, 31-year-old Mohammed Lahoui. I'm definitely butchering that. Bulel. Mohammed Lahoui Bulel. He's originally from Tunisia. Now, we don't have the motive yet. So, in other words, the articles have not explained the motive yet. But I'll go ahead and go out on a limb here and give you what will likely be the three potential options. And actually, I would guess there's going to be a mix of them. So, as usually happens in the wake of these terror attacks in these situations, they'll say a couple different things. So the first one, I'm sure, will be this, you know, you'll find some statements online or wherever where this person says, hey, man, the French, you guys colonized Tunisia, so I'm getting back for that. So for those of you who don't know, from 1881 to 1956, France was in Tunisia, and then obviously through that time, brutal rule, so on and so forth. We know how these things went. So this was perhaps could be something where it's an argument that he makes. None of this in any way is a justification. This guy's a brutal, horrific, disgusting, grotesque terrorist, murderer, savage barbarian. Let's be perfectly clear about that. The other thing that he might bring up, as oftentimes is the case, by the way, we're just waiting, TikTok, until ISIS takes responsibility for this. Because it's a guarantee. After all these things now, whether it was actual communication with the main group or not, but, you know, eventually they'll come out and say, yes, it was from us. So I'm just waiting on that. I can guarantee you that that's going to happen at some point. But the other thing they say is, oh, Syria. I'm responding for what's happening in Syria and Iraq, and oh, my God, this is horrible. The big, bad Westerners are killing innocent people. You know, oh, they're killing my people. They're killing my people in Syria, so I had to respond for that. Yeah, I think that logic breaks down. Why? If that's what you're truly concerned about, well, it's a weird way to show that killing innocent people is wrong by killing innocent people. So, you can never understand the logic of terrorists because they don't have logic. So it's just blind rage and, you know, fight back. And if I just so happen to kill innocent women and children, man, little kids, well, I mean, what was I going to do? I had to do it because you're so big and bad and savage, you Westerners, that you killed innocent people. You just killed innocent people. So, again, it breaks down. The logic never makes any sense. These are grotesque terrorist actions. And then, of course, the third thing, and overwhelmingly likely that there will be something that leaks on this within the day, I would imagine, is the age-old defense, my God told me I have to kill you. And please, 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 don't be in the crowd that says this has nothing to do with religion. Now, again, as of right now, we don't know all the facts. So I'm letting you know, and I'm giving you the three different possibilities of what are going to be motives. Obviously, there are other possibilities, but these are the three most likely ones. And I would be surprised if there wasn't a mix of these different things that we find out eventually. But don't be in the crowd that says this has nothing to do with religion. Of course, I mean, there's an old saying, I forget who came up with it, forgive me. But the idea is, if you're not a psychopath, so obviously just sheer out-and-out sociopaths, psychopaths are capable of doing this kind of damage. But to make a normal person do something as barbaric and savage as this, it takes the brainwashing and the Kool-Aid of fundamentalist religion. So the thing is, if you actually believe it, and I know it's hard for people to imagine that there are people in the world that believe this shit, but if you actually believe that God is telling you, you have to slaughter these people, women, children, who gives a fuck, they're all bad, they're all evil, they're all infidels, well, if you believe that, Well, then it becomes illogical not to do it in their sick, twisted minds. So, of course, there can be a strong component of brainwashing and literalism. And we need to understand that that's a scourge that needs to be addressed. And I don't want anybody to deny any aspect of the motive when it comes out, when we get all the facts on it. But I'm already seeing it now, man. People like to live in a black and white world where you can pin everything on just one thing. So, you know, for the people who say it has nothing to do with religion, they almost always focus on, oh, it's got to be revenge or retribution for Western actions in these various countries in the Middle East. But then there's the other crowd that says, no, it always, in every circumstance, all it has to do with is religion. Well, that's not really true either, because it's not like the most devout are always terrorists. There are plenty of very devout people who are not terrorists and who actually live the exact opposite life, and they're super peaceful. So this isn't to blame all Muslims in any way, shape, or form. But the reality of the world is that it's disgusting and it's messy. And, you know, you can have an amalgamation of different factors that go into determining what leads somebody to do such horrific acts. But at the end of the day, I can tell you for sure, this is not the way forward. This is not how you do it. This is insane savagery. When is it going to stop, man? When is it going to stop? I wish I had some sort of, you know, concrete answers for you as to, well, this is how we move forward and this is how we address it. I don't. I mean, how can anybody look at this stuff and say, I got it. I know exactly what we have to do. There's already people coming out talking about restricting civil liberties, doing more bombings. I mean, we've been bombing all along. It doesn't seem to have made it better. I'm not saying that because I'm some sort of pacifist. In fact, I'm not a pacifist. I believe in doing violence for self-defense. But my point is that doesn't seem to solve the problem, because it appears like this stuff keeps on happening. So I don't have any answers for you today. I only have grief for you today. I only have mourning for you today. I only have confusion and anger for you today. And the only thing I'd caution is, again, I'd keep reminding people and I'd keep telling people all the evidence matters, all the data matters. So, you know, again, I don't know any of the facts yet in terms of the motive, because nobody's reporting on that. But I can almost guarantee you it's probably going to be a mix of those three different things, where he'll say, oh, you colonized our people, and oh my God, you're killing innocents in Syria, so now I must kill innocents here. That makes no sense. And, oh yes, my God told me to do it, so I had to do it. I had to do it. Fuck your God. Your God is not real. Your God is not true. You know, this goes to everybody who's a true Kool-Aid drinker. It's not real. Stop basing your life on it. There are over 4,000 religions in the world right now. You really think you're that special? You just happen to be in the right one. I picked the right one. I hit the lottery. I picked the right one. Every other religion throughout history, dead wrong. Mine, right. You're not that special, okay? You're just like everybody else, born in a different cultural context, in a different religious context, and brainwashed with your own myths. It's amazing that in 2016, we live on a planet where people still effectively believe the equivalent of somebody in Rome who actually believes in the Roman gods, or in Greece who believes in the Greek gods, or some random tribe in the Amazon disconnected from the modern world that believes in, you know, some sort of pagan gods and certain rituals and tribal jungle gods. None of them are real. Bad ideas lead to bad actions. Bad ideas have consequences. So today, I don't have any answers for you guys. I really don't. I just have the facts of what we know happened, and I'm in the same boat as everybody else. Confused, angry, you know, don't know exactly how to move forward, but I just want the violence to stop. The violence has to end. And denying all the different parts of the problem is not going to help in that respect. So moving forward, let's look at all the evidence. Let's evaluate it. Let's be intelligent and let's be rational. Okay. All right, now let's go to Politico, and what they're reporting about the sad, sad Republican Party. There's a really sad story reported on in Politico yesterday. Listen to what the RNC is up to now. Millions of dollars short and running out of time, organizers of the Republican National Convention have written an urgent request for $6 million to Las Vegas billionaire Sheldon Adelson. In a letter addressed to the Adelsons obtained by Politico, the Cleveland 2016 host committees revealed the names of more than two dozen prominent corporations and individuals who have reneged on a collective $8.1 million in pledged donations. Okay, so in other words, there are some big businesses that hate Donald Trump so much, they're like, yeah, I know I said I was going to give the RNC X amount of money. Now I'm no longer going to give you guys the money because I don't like them. Okay, so who's in that crowd? Well, we have David Koch. We have FedEx, Visa, Pepsi, Coca-Cola. They all backed out. And so the RNC is now begging Papa Adelson, please, we need more money or else we can't put this thing on. So they're, whatever it is, they said like $8 million short or so, and they're begging him for $6 million. Who knows where they're going to try to pick up the other $2 million. But there's a lot to say about this. First of all, isn't it sick that we live in a system where this exists and we all just accept it? Like, I mean, think about that, man. One of the two major political parties can't raise enough money from private interests to put on their convention. So now they're begging a specific billionaire for the money to put on the convention. Okay, we're supposed to be a constitutional republic and a representative democracy. And a big part of the political process, something that happens all the time, a convention, political convention, they're begging individuals, private citizens, for cash. You think that sets up a conflict of interest a wee bit? Call me crazy, but I think that if you're getting money from all these different big businesses, corporations, individual billionaires, you're going to be beholden to them. You know why I think that? Because you're going to be beholden to them. Why do we all accept this? And, you know, everybody, give credit to David Koch and FedEx and Visa and Pepsi and Coca-Cola and all these different companies that pulled out. But hold on, these companies, I don't know if it's these specifically to be fair, but there are big businesses that are donating to the Democratic convention. Why do you think they're doing that? They're doing that because they think Hillary Clinton and the Democrats this year, this time around, this election, they're going to play ball. So yeah, donate to them and it's all good. Well, that sickens me more than the fact that they pulled out of this. Like, I think I'm more angry at the Democrats in this sense. I want the donors and the sponsors and the wealthy individuals to pull out of giving private money to these things because I know they want something in return. Well, you don't think this leads to these companies getting some sort of special subsidy or welfare check, corporate welfare check, or tax loophole, they shove more shit in the Cayman Islands or Bermuda? No, that's exactly what it leads to. You'd be crazy to think that's not what it leads to. So that's the problem with this. Guys, look, it's not that much to ask to have our tax dollars fund something like this. It's really not all that to have a convention once every few years. That's not super expensive. And if you have all the taxpayers in the United States of America, over 300 million people paying their taxes, I mean, how much is it going to be off out of everybody's fucking paycheck? A few cents? See, if we do that, the politicians are much more likely to represent us. But if the private donors are the ones who fund the conventions, obviously they're going to represent those donors. So to hear that, donors are pulling out of the Republican convention, I say, good. I want them to pull out of the Democratic convention, too. I don't want private donors to fund these things. I mean, this should be common sense, man. These are supposed to be representatives of the public, and they're going to private special interests for the money. They're going to represent those special interests way more than they're going to represent a random grandpa in Kentucky. I would rather them represent the grandpa in Kentucky. So they have to beg Sheldon Adelson. Again, you don't think that this means that they're going to do more favors for Sheldon Adelson if he agrees? If he says, yeah, of course that's exactly what it means. So I don't know why we're all okay with this system. And in all the articles I see about stuff like this, it always has this underlying tone of like, hey, the Republicans are so stupid because they can't even sell out properly anymore. No, I'm happy by almost any means necessary getting the money out of the system. So when you have the donors go, he's so unpalatable, I don't want to fund him, I think that's a good thing because they're not funding him. that's a more positive thing. Now, again, Trump, it's not like Trump doesn't get any big money donors. Of course he does. The head of Johnson & Johnson, somebody who was selling out for Jeb Bush, specifically giving money to Jeb Bush. Trump ripped Jeb Bush for taking money from this guy, calling him a puppet of this guy. Now that guy leads his fundraising efforts. So he is bought by different big business interests. But yeah, the more that pull out, the better. Because then at least the chances increase a little bit that, hey, maybe he'll actually represent the people. Maybe they'll actually give a shit about Americans as opposed to these powerful, powerful corporate interests. So on the one hand, is this sad? Of course it's sad. It's sad in the sense that it is a guy who wants to sell out and he still can't even sell out. Like, he's so ineffectual and incompetent that he's like, no, seriously, you can buy me. And they're like, we're good. In one respect, yes, that's super sad. But on the other hand, like I just described to you guys, the net effect is actually better because I want less private money in the system, more public money. Let's just ban private money in our political system and make it so that it's clean elections, always publicly funded. Then the politicians will be much more likely to represent the people. Okay. Okay, now, let's go to Trump's VP pick. So the media is reporting that Trump settled on his VP pick. Knowing Trump, anything is possible in terms of changing his mind at the last minute. But as of now, he says that he's going with Mike Pence. This is the governor of Indiana. So what do we need to know about this guy? Well, I would describe him as a fringe establishment Republican. Almost a contradiction in terms there, but not really. So he's still within the spectrum of being an establishment Republican, total corporate sellout, but he's on the fringe of the establishment Republicans. So he was in Congress. He was there for a while. Right now he's the governor of Indiana. And he's an insider. And he's probably most known for recently causing outrage by signing an anti-LGBT bill that allowed businesses to discriminate. It solidified the right of businesses to discriminate against gay people because of their religious beliefs. Oh, my religion says I don't want to hire no damn gays, so I'm not going to hire you, or I'm going to fire you. So this is what this guy believes. Now, in response to this, basically every corporation in Indiana was like, yeah, piss off. We're going to leave if you sign that and if this stays law. So he's like, well, me? No, I love gay people. I don't know what you're talking about. I'm going to get rid of that. So in other words, this is what I mean when I say he's a fringe establishment Republican. So he was outside of the realm of establishment Republican. He was a true social conservative Kool-Aid drinker. But then when push came to shove and the businesses were like, dude, we're about to be out. He's like, oh, no. I mean, gay people are great. You're great. So then he moved back inside the fringe or the spectrum of establishment Republicanism. He also supported the Iraq War. That's interesting. This is the pick that Donald Trump went with, a guy who supported the Iraq War. He's been on the campaign trail hammering the Iraq War endlessly. And, you know, he almost kneecaps one of his own main arguments that he's been using against Hillary Clinton, where he says, she was for it, I'm against it. That's a strong argument, but now he kind of kneecapped that because his second-hand man or right-hand man, or the fuck you call it, he's like, yeah, no, totally, Iraq War. He was one of the lead defenders of the Iraq War, Mike Pence. And let's also be clear for the record that Trump, his rhetoric on the campaign trail has been great on the Iraq War, but it actually isn't true that he was against it. There's audio of him on Howard Stern from back when the war first happened, and he's basically like, yeah, why not? Just give it a shot. So he wasn't against it, let's be clear. Later on, his rhetoric changed, and his rhetoric now is good, and I'll give him credit for that. He also supports the TPP. Now I just, like, what are you doing, Trump? What are you doing? The two decent things about Trump, that he is always hammering the Iraq War today, and he's always doing rhetoric against the TPP, now those things are gone. Because you're picking somebody who's wrong on the two main things where you actually make a little bit of sense with your rhetoric. Why would you do that? I mean, I actually know why he's doing that. He's doing that because all he hears constantly from establishment Republicans is, oh my God, you're losing the base, you're losing the base, you're losing the base, you're losing the base, you're losing the base. So he's picking somebody who he thinks is going to shore up the base. Now, why do I think that's a bad strategy? I think it's a bad strategy because it's actually not true that Trump lost the base. He never lost the base. That's why he won the Republican primary. You know who he lost? The only people he lost are establishment Republicans. People like Bill Kristol, some prominent neoconservatives. Rich, elite, establishment Republicans in the Washington bubble. That's who he lost. But he keeps hearing from them that he lost the base, so he's like, I got to shore up the base. I got to pick this guy Mike Pence. But you already have the base, jackass. You already fucking have the base. If he went with a somewhat moderate pick, I think he would have upped his chances big time for winning the election. But no, he went with a typical douchebag and somebody who supports the TPP and somebody who supported the Iraq war. The two best things about Trump is that he hits those things. He's like, I would like to eliminate the only good things about me. Okay, more. The Koch brothers really, really like him. And they've given him hundreds of thousands of dollars. See, this is another reason why I probably picked Pence. He's like, well, the Koch brothers fucking hate me. The Kochs do hate Trump. So he's like, maybe this will make them feel like, maybe we'll go back on that and donate a little bit to Trump's campaign because he desperately needs big money. He's raised big money from some sources, but a lot of the donors don't like him. Okay, so also, he attempted to start a state-run media organization in Indiana, which basically just does propaganda. It was compared to Pravda. I remember we covered that story on the show. So, I mean, the guy's a silly guy. He's a kind of authoritarian, just like Trump in that sense. Like, who does that? I'm going to create a state-run media organization, and then you act like it's a good novel idea, like an original thought. Like, oh, nobody's ever done this before. Yeah, every authoritarian regime ever always controls the media. You're like, I want to do that. Yeah, that's stupid. We see right through it. Obviously, you're just going to do propaganda for your own administration. I mean, what do you think, we're dense? You're dense. And then he did criticize Trump on a couple things, prominently the Muslim ban. He called it, quote, offensive and unconstitutional. That's a rare area where Mike Pence is actually better than Donald Trump. He doesn't believe in climate change. He fucking doesn't believe in climate change. He wrote articles on this. He was briefly a while back a conservative talk show host. That's like the mark of an idiot, is that anybody who's ever been a conservative talk show host is like, come on, dude, really? That's what you're going to do? So he wrote these pieces and whatnot, talking about how, oh, yeah, don't. Actually, it's the opposite. World is totally cooling. Totally cooling. Believe me, I'm a conservative talk show host. I know better than scientists and double-blind studies, peer-reviewed. Yeah. So profound idiot. Just an idiot. If you can't tell, I'm done with the crowd that doesn't believe in climate change. Dismiss. Get the fuck away from me. I have no interest in you. You're a child. It's almost akin to arguing that the Earth is flat. It really is. At this point, with all the evidence, all the data, I mean, there's been this giant meta-analysis of studies done over like a decade. All the credible studies on climate change. So in other words, not the ones funded by fucking Exxon and Chevron. And what did they find? It's something like 99.9% of the studies agree that climate change is happening, largely man-made, and we got to do something to fix it. So I'm still not done yet because I saved the best two things for last. He doesn't believe in evolution.
It's 2016. Stop it.
I can't, man. This is we're the most powerful country on the planet. We have the most gargantuan military in human history. And we're going to have idiots like this running shit who don't even believe in evolution. And I'm supposed to think you're rational enough to have fucking nuclear codes. What a joke this is. You don't believe in evolution. Idiot's a creationist. He thinks the world is 6,000 years old. The world is 4.54 billion years old. The universe is about 13.8 billion years old. Look at this shit, man.
Yeah, 6,000, we'll go with that. And believe the Bible.
Because you're a fucking moron, that's why. He's also a smoking truther. What is that, you ask? I'm glad you asked. It's somebody who has questions about whether or not smoking actually makes you sick, and whether or not there's actually a link between smoking and, say, cancer or emphysema. I'm not kidding. He wrote a piece on this. By the way, he took so much money from
shock, shock, the tobacco companies. Would you look at that? Look at his opinions. They happen to line up with the tobacco companies. In fact, he literally said at one point, quote, smoking doesn't kill. This is Trump's VP pick. You ready for the, again, somehow it gets worse and worse and worse and worse and worse. The saddest part of all this. What do the Democrats do? Some of the Democrats, including President Obama, they came out with positive words about Mike Pence. Let me repeat that. Maybe you didn't hear me right. Positive words about Mike Pence. You're like, what the fuck, Kyle? You just told me 800 things that make this guy a lunatic. That's right. You know what they did? They took the one decent thing he did and praised it. Nobody's saying anything about all this shit. Smoking truther doesn't believe in evolution. A moron doesn't believe in climate change. For the Iraq war. For TPP. Nobody says anything about that. What do they say?
You know, as governor of Indiana, he expanded Medicaid. This is a very moderate choice. Moderate choice on Trump's behalf.
I give up. This is how far right the Republican Party has moved. And this is how far right the Democrats have moved up with the Republicans. The entire spectrum has shifted to the right. And we have this big of a loser as a candidate, and Obama comes out and talks about the one decent thing he did. He expanded Medicaid. Yay! Yeah, ignore everything else about his record. He expanded Medicaid, so I guess he's moderate. If this is a moderate Republican, that tells you a lot about Republicans. Okay. I got to take a quick break. When we come back, oh boy, I got a bunch of stuff on Hillary Clinton. You're not going to want to miss it, man. It's sad on top of sad on top of sad. But there's some good news for progressives, and you don't want to miss that. Stay right there. Son of a bitch, we're back, y'all. I had to make it a quick break because I got a lot of stuff to get through. Okay. Let's talk a little bit about some good news here for progressives, I think. Hillary Clinton should be panicking. And she should be panicking for a number of reasons, but U.S. Uncut explains one of them here. Jill Stein, the presumptive Green Party presidential nominee, is seeing an unprecedented surge of energy for her campaign
in the wake of Bernie Sanders' endorsement of Hillary Clinton. Stein said donations to her campaign have increased tenfold in just over 24 hours due to Bernie Sanders' endorsement of Hillary and a resulting fallout from the Democratic Party. Since Tuesday morning, the Green Party has received over $80,000 in contributions, over half of which comes from first-time donors, and half of which comes in the form of contributions under $50. Tellingly, about 615 of those contributions totaled $27, the exact number commonly trumpeted and solicited by the Sanders campaign during his revolutionary grassroots funding movement. So there's been a 1,000% increase in funding for Jill Stein since Bernie endorsed Hillary Clinton. Look out, Hillary. Look out. See, this is the thing that I've been trying to get across from the beginning. I warned you that stuff like this was going to happen. You know, I said, Hillary Clinton, if she really wants to pick up Bernie's voters in a serious way, so in other words, if she wants to get 8 or 9 out of 10 of Bernie voters and not 5 or 6, the way to do it is to be totally honest, totally open, totally truthful, and make a good faith effort to move in that direction. That really has not happened. And I think people get the sense that insofar as she has moved in Bernie's direction, it's really window dressing. And it's not a good faith effort. And it's just, we're going to tell you what we think you want to hear in order to get your vote. But when push comes to shove, I'm going to be the same Hillary Clinton that I've always been, namely center-right, pro-corporate, pro-establishment, too hawkish, you name it. So, and, you know, look, some people come after me for this, but I maintain from the beginning that in safe states, yes, I would vote for Jill Stein. I am going to vote for Jill Stein. I'm in New York. So if it's a deep red state or a deep blue state, go for it. But then I also caution, look, in swing states, let's keep it real. Either Hillary or Trump is going to be president, so hold your nose, vomit, puke, whatever you got to do, go vote for Hillary. But this is something that should be a warning sign. This is a warning sign to Hillary Clinton that, you know, you need to do more to get them. And, like, was there a brief possibility, was there a time where she perhaps could have even earned my vote? I'd say yes. You know, Hillary probably could have earned my vote if she adopted more of Bernie's platform and more of Bernie's ideas, and also if she gave assurances that, number one, she picks a super progressive VP. I would be good with an Elizabeth Warren VP pick. I know some people think Elizabeth has totally sold out, so no, that wouldn't move them. But also, you know, guarantees that the cabinet is not going to be the 90s cabinet that kind of fucked up the economy in the first place because they repealed Glass-Steagall and, remember, and did NAFTA that was signed under Bill Clinton. So if there were reassurances that you're moving away from this neoliberal direction, and to the point where I believe it, like, it's not like I don't believe it by definition. There are certain things that Hillary could do where I would believe it. So if she were to move in that direction and it was open and honest and clear, well, then I would vote for her. But the more she moves in the other direction, the less I'm inclined to do that. And apparently a lot of Bernie supporters agree with me. By the way, up to 20% of Bernie supporters are going to vote for Donald Trump. This is according to numbers from about a month ago. I'd be curious to see exactly what it's like right now. But 20% said they're going to vote for Trump. And then you have a lot more who are going to vote for Jill Stein. And so at the end of the day, you might have Hillary Clinton getting only like 55% of Bernie Sanders supporters. You do realize that that's almost a doomsday scenario, right? That's almost like, oh, Trump wins. Because you need to get the base on your side. I mean, don't abandon your base. It's politics 101. And the Democrats always abandon their base. Arrogantly think, like, they're there no matter what. Now let me run to the right and try to get Republicans to vote for me. They're not going to fucking vote for you. The only Republicans on the planet who are going to vote for you are the establishment elite Republicans who don't like Trump because they want him to be more sold out to big business, and big business doesn't like him. So by moving to the right, you're losing. You're losing. You're going in the wrong direction. This is the opposite of what your campaign should be doing. But in their infinite arrogance, they can't help themselves. They have to move to the right because that's the model that Democratic strategists have told them works for the longest time. I'm here to tell you it doesn't work. And this is more evidence of it here. You know, Jill Stein is a perfect example of an insurgent candidate who's getting more and more popular because of the failure of the Democrats to stay true to their base. Okay. All right, now I'm going to go to a really, really, really cringeworthy incident with Hillary Clinton. I call it an incident because it kind of is an incident. But you'll see she didn't mean it in that way. Hillary Clinton was on the campaign trail with Tim Kaine, somebody who many people think may be her VP pick, and she hit us with this line for the kids.
We're going to have a lot of jobs, jobs from building infrastructure to coding, creating new apps. I don't know who created Pokemon Go, but I'm trying to figure out how we get them to have Pokemon go to the polls.
Stop. What are you doing? Come on. Come on. Come on. All right, this actually really pisses me off. Hey, you want to know why it pisses me off? Because this is Hillary Clinton's idea of millennial outreach. This is her idea to get young voters. I'm not kidding about that. So you could see her in her meeting behind closed doors with her staffers, and she's talking to them. A lot of them are millennials. And, you know, they're like, okay, what do we do? We're not doing well with millennials. Fucking Bernie Sanders was doing so much better. God, if only you were like a really, really, really old Jew from Brooklyn. Maybe that'll help you. Like, this is the stuff that they think. Like, what is it? What is it that gets these youngins to the polls? I don't understand. What are the kids like nowadays? Is it still skateboarding and Zima and hula hoops? Is that what they're into? Can I hula hoop on stage with Tim Kaine? Would that get me three more millennial voters? I really got to figure out how to connect with them. Anyway, is my phone call ready with Goldman Sachs? But see, that's the thing. The thing is, it's all surface. It's all fake standard politician bullshit. You know, I'm reminded of the scene in Austin Powers where Dr. Eve is like, I'm hip, I'm with it. Tuk, 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 tuk. Like, are you going to do the Macarena and act like that's the hip thing to do? Oh, I'm cool. You know how you get millennials on your side, Hillary? Actually give a shit about the substantive political issues, and you don't. And that's why it's hard for people to go in your direction. For fuck's sake, man, 50% of Bernie supporters are like, Hillary, I can't. What am I going to do? I can't. Jill Stein just saw a 1,000% increase in funds after Bernie endorsed Hillary. So people are like, 20% of Bernie voters are going to go to Trump. Are going to go to Trump. That's an abject failure of the Hillary administration. That's what that reflects. So, or Hillary campaign, I should say, not administration. So if 20% are going to Trump, many more are going to Jill Stein. Only 50% of Bernie supporters are like, maybe, okay. You've been doing this shit all along. The surface, I'm cool. Yeah. I enjoy the Pokemon Go. Now you need to Pokemon go to the polls. You've been doing this kind of shit all along. It's not fucking working. So what's the answer? I don't know. Maybe millennials give a shit about student loan debt, that crisis on our hands where they can't fucking afford to get a new car. They can't afford to buy a house. Because they're up to their fucking eyeballs in debt because of shitty policy. When other modern nations have universal college, you know, you're out there, oh, let's talk about that. No, talk about the policy substance. She recently moved a little bit in the direction of Bernie Sanders with education policy. Go all the way. Go all the way. Stop with the bullshit half measures, man. You know, if we really believed you cared about the issues, if we really believed you're concerned about getting people a living wage, you're concerned about stopping the wars, if we really believed your prime focus was these policy things that affect the lives of young people, they would be running to the polls for you. How do I know that? That's what they did for Bernie Sanders. That's what they did for Bernie Sanders, because they thought, oh, this guy really cares, he really knows about policy substance, that's what I'm going to do. But with Hillary, this is her way of showing that she cares about you.
Pokemon Go! I enjoy the Pokemon game. It is very nice. Would you guys like to play some Super Mario Bros. With me on my brand shiny new Super Nintendo? Or how about I break out this Atari? Do you kids like the Atari? It is so great. Let's go grab some Mountain Dews and maybe some Dunkaroos. Is this what you like? I'm sure you like this. Please vote for me.
Goldman Sachs, seriously, where's the phone call? Is it ready yet? By the way, you know what people would say in response to that? They'd say, come on, man, she's trying. Yeah, but that's the problem. You're trying. You have to try. If you just focused on your message and you believed in your message and you actually wanted to make people's lives better, that would be enough. That would be enough for people to say, I'm going to vote for her. But that's not the case. So you have to try. And your trying is just covering up of your intentions and what they really are, and they're not pure. Okay, let's move on here. I got another bad one. I'm going after Hillary today. Sorry, but I got to do it. Hillary Clinton is out with a new attack ad against Donald Trump. Let's watch it, and then I'll break it down.
I love the old days. You know what they used to do to guys like that when they were in a place like this? They'd be carried out on a stretcher, folks. And you can tell them to go themselves.
I could stand in the middle of Fifth Avenue and shoot somebody, and I wouldn't lose any voters, okay? It's like incredible.
When Mexico sends its people, they're bringing drugs, they're bringing crime, they're rapists. You know, you could see there was blood coming out of her eyes, blood coming out of her wherever. If you had to see this guy, oh, I don't know what I said, oh, I don't remember. He's so like, I don't remember.
Our children and grandchildren will look back at this time, at the choices we are about to make, the goals we will strive for, the principles we will live by, and we need to make sure that they can be proud of us.
I'm Hillary Clinton, and I approve this message.
What the fuck are you doing? What are you doing? Okay, this is like a new kind of puritanism. This idea of like, oh, the kids, what do we tell the kids? I don't know. Okay, politics, by its very nature, is not for kids. It's for adults. I don't know if you know this, we have a minimum voting age, because we don't want fucking toddlers voting. Why? Politics ain't for them. So this is fake outrage. This is PC outrage. Oh, the kids! What do we tell the kids? We need to act right so that the kids can see us acting right, because then we got to raise the next generation of people, and they got to be respectable. Right, the kids need to act right. So, gunning down Osama bin Laden and shooting him in the face. That's something that the kids should see. The kids should see on TV our bombers, you know, flying in Syria or drone strikes in Pakistan or whatever. That's cool to see. And Hillary Clinton, we know she loves her some war, voting for the Iraq war. Like, all those things. Yeah, those things are cool. The kids can see that. Oh, Donald Trump said a naughty word. Tisk, tisk, good sir. Tisk, tisk. It ain't about the kids, man. Fuck the kids. Politics is not for them. Let's be adults here. No, why should we have to dumb down the conversation to make it palatable to kids? I mean, what should we...
start having policy discussions with Elmo-style nursery rhymes. I don't even know if Elmo does nursery rhymes. But you guys know what I'm saying. I mean, what, do you want to make it like Blue's Clues? We'll have a conversation about NAFTA and the TPP with that weirdo in Blue's Clues who's singing a song and shit and dancing with a weird cartoon dog? Is a weird cartoon dog in Blue's Clues? I'm proving I don't know anything about any of that stuff. But that's not an argument, Hillary. That's not an argument. That's PC outrage. The kids! The kids! The kids! Vote for me because I'm really good when it comes to stuff about kids. Like, for example, when, you know, I'm in favor of the drone war that kills 90% of the wrong people and kills innocent kids. And when I supported Netanyahu when he did his bombing orgy fest in Gaza and killed 500 kids. I'm supportive of that. Fuck those kids. But your kids, oh, I'll say nice words. And then those nice words will make it so that, hey, everything's good. Trump uses naughty language. You don't want that guy. You want somebody who's respectable as they massacre people overseas. See, this is why I get so angry with her, because she doesn't focus on policy substance. And by the way, it's not like you can't generate outrage in the right ways against Donald Trump. I want you to be aggressive. I want you to be harsh. I want you to be really cutthroat in your attacks against Trump. But when you do it in a way that's not focused on policy, when you do it in a way that says, like, oh my God, he's so offensive. Yeah, everybody fucking knows he's offensive. He's been offensive from day one, and he still won the Republican primary. Because people aren't mad at him about that. People actually like him because of that. Because they go, oh, this is a breath of fresh air. We live in an environment where anybody says anything, and all of a sudden they're tarred, and they're, you know, polite society ostracizes them because you said something that was slightly off, so now we're going to call you whatever, racist, bigot, this, that. So he comes along and he's like, I don't give a fuck about the response. And by the way, he actually is a bigot. But he comes out and he's like, yeah, let's ban all Muslims. Fuck it. Let's support 11 million undocumented immigrants. Fuck it. I don't give a shit. Mexicans coming over the border. They're rapists. They're criminals. I assume some are good people, but they're rapists and criminals. So, yeah, he says shit like that. And then people are just like, oh, finally. There are some people who don't even agree with him on those things who go, but at least he's fucking saying something. He's saying something. God damn it. Finally, somebody's putting a middle finger up to the people who would come out with this new style of puritanism and say, but the kids, oh my God, you said something that an adult would say, but kids exist. Yeah, you know what? Alcohol is legal. Should we ban that because of the fucking kids? No. Should we ban all adult activities? Like, get rid of strip clubs. Kids exist. Kids. This is an argument that right-wingers used to make, and now PC corporatist, the center-right Democrats, like Hillary Clinton, they're the ones who are like, the kids. Fuck the kids. We're adults having an adult conversation about politics, man. Now, you want to go hard against Trump? Again, I'm with you 100%, but you got to focus on the right things. And you got to let people know, not that, oh, he's offensive and naughty, because that makes them like him. You got to let them know, it's not that he's offensive and naughty that's the problem. It's that he's a fucking terrorist. He wants to be a terrorist. And that'll lead to more terrorism against us. So you vote for me so that we don't get attacked. That's why you vote for me. Not because, oh my God, I am more high class and highbrow. You vote for me because if you vote for that guy, you're voting for a terrorist and you're inviting terrorist attacks against us. So I've shown this ad before on air, but this is my ad against Trump. And to this day it stands up, and to this day it should be run, and this is how you defeat him.
And the other thing is with the terrorists, you have to take out their families. When you get these terrorists, you have to take out their families. They care about their lives, don't kid yourself. But they say they don't care about their lives. You have to take out their families.
Hillary Clinton is questioning his naughty language. I'm questioning his basic morality. That's the difference. You don't even know that fucking killing civilians is wrong? You call the Geneva Conventions the problem? You say we should torture, quote, even if it doesn't work? These are the things that you believe? Okay. Well, then you agree with ISIS. You agree with ISIS. These are things that ISIS believes. Yeah, let's kill civilians. That's the whole point. I want to kill civilians. I want to kill civilians. Why don't I? I'm a fucking terrorist. That's why. I want to kill civilians. Donald Trump says that. Instead of you going out there and calling him Terrorist Don, what do? Oh, you cursed once on the public scene! I am so outraged. When naughty language causes more of a backlash and more of a reaction and more attacks than saying, than somebody saying, I am going to kill civilians, maybe your moral compass is also broken. Not just his. His is obviously broken. But maybe yours is also broken. Because that should generate the outrage. That should generate the backlash. His disgusting, idiotic policy ideas like, yeah, I'll just make a deal. We'll default on the U.S. debt. Which would lead to a worldwide depression. You can't do that. But when he says stuff like that, it's minimal backlash. But the things you focus on are his naughty, naughty language. What about the kids? You also have a problem with your morality. Because your compass is broken. You're not outraged by the right things which are policy-driven, which would affect everybody's lives in a negative way. So stop just trying to win and trying to craft an argument that you think other people want to hear and start talking about who Donald Trump really is and what he actually says in terms of policy. This is how you beat him. You're not going to beat him by pretending, oh my God, his language is so bad that he's so beyond the pale that no respectable person can vote for him. Because you know how people are going to respond to that? Fuck off! That's how they're going to respond to that. But if you give them real reasons not to vote for him, like, hey, do you want to keep your family safe? He wants to kill civilians. You don't think people are going to respond by killing civilians? You make arguments like that, people go, yeah, I guess that guy is kind of crazy, isn't he? So wake the fuck up. You got to drop the PC outrage kind of campaign. It's fake outrage. It's mucked up. Nobody actually looks at, you know, Trump when he curses or when he, you know, says something that just is offensive and goes, that's the problem. Nobody really feels like that when he says stuff like that. When you should feel like that is in situations like this, where he says, I want to kill civilians. That's what you should be focusing on. This is what you should run your campaign on. All you gave me about Trump was this little nugget, this little clip, that political ad I made, I could defeat him. I could defeat him. But you have all a wealth of material, all the material in the world, and you're still struggling. You're tied in the fucking polls today. You're embarrassing. You're embarrassing. You've been handed the easiest opponent on the planet, and you're still fucking it up. You're still fucking it up. This guy's a buffoon with a fucking meerkat on his head. He's a billionaire, or allegedly, running at a time when people are mad at the billionaires. You still can't beat him. You still are having trouble. You should be up fucking 15 points in the polls. But you're running a shitty PC outrage-based campaign. Keep going in this direction, you're gonna fucking lose. Hear me now, quote me later. Keep going in this direction, you're gonna fucking lose. You gotta get intelligent and rational about how you go after him. He's easy to defeat if you do it the right way. Okay. I gotta take a quick break. When we come back, I'm still not done beating up on Hillary. Mitt Romney. There's disgusting, disturbing parallels between her and Mitt Romney. Stay right there. We'll be right back. Son of a bitch. All right, we're back. Let's do it. So in 2012, Mitt Romney's campaign was shitting the bed. He just couldn't generate any excitement for him, for understandable reasons. I mean, he's a giant human senior citizen Ken doll, basically, is what he is. And in the midst of his campaign falling apart, we had this super sad moment.
Wow. That's quite a guy, isn't it, Paul Ryan? That's something. Romney Ryan. There we go. All right, that's great. Thank you.
Oh, that is so sad. So Paul Ryan gives a speech. They brought Paul Ryan on the campaign trail with Mitt Romney because Mitt wasn't generating any excitement. So they bring Paul Ryan out there. Paul Ryan helped a little bit, although he's also not the most exciting person on the planet. But so he's given speeches, and then after the speech, he hands the microphone off, and he's like, oh, isn't that great? And then the crowd starts chanting, Ryan, 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 Ryan. And Romney's like, oh, I can't have this. No, Romney Ryan, Romney Ryan, Romney Ryan. And the thing about that is it just shows how massively out of touch Mitt Romney is. Because it's like you can't, like you're just trying to force your view of reality onto what already is reality. As opposed to doing the work, being likable enough where people want to chant your name. It also shows insecurity. It's like, I don't know, I guess I'm really not the best candidate, but just throw me in there anyway. Please like me. So it just smells funky, you know? It's like, okay, this is just weak and insecure and weird, and you're just trying to pretend like you're already popular when you're not popular. All right, now, compare that to what happened with the Hillary surrogate this week. Let's watch.
To elect Hillary, not only to keep Donald Trump out of office,
you did it. You fucking did it. Now, it's not Hillary herself. It's a Hillary surrogate. I don't know if Bernie was at this event or what the background story is, but she's giving a speech talking about how not just to defeat Donald Trump, we got to get Hillary in there, yada, yada. Crowd starts going, Bernie, 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 Bernie. Sheer panic over her face. She's like, Hillary, 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 Hillary. That reminds me of Nutty President. Hercules, Hercules, Hercules. Oh, stop it. Stop it. Stop it. Okay, I have a message for everybody out there. Just because you want reality to be X doesn't mean reality is X. And if you try to force the reality that you want onto us, which is not the reality, well, the backlash is going to be laughter. The response is going to be, oh my God, you sound like stupid. Like you sound so disconnected. It's like you're trying to force Hillary on the situation, but that's so indicative of her entire campaign. Like, you have to understand, she won because of her name and celebrity status. So she was the first lady, then she was Secretary of State, then she ran in 08. So Democrats across the country, they know who she is. And they're like, oh, I guess this one. Man, they didn't even fucking know who Bernie Sanders was. And despite people not knowing who he was, he almost won. He almost beat Hillary. But she acts like, oh, no, it's a mandate. Everybody loves me. No, actually, if you look at the numbers, the more people got to know
who you are, the less people liked you. That's just a fact. The more the campaign went on, you know, people were like, actually, no, I'm not with it. I don't really like you. So that's a sad reality, and they're just trying to, instead of addressing the problems, the many problems with her campaign, they just try to ignore the reality. They just try to pretend like the reality isn't what it is. Let me give you another example. The other day on Twitter, Eric Bollert, Democratic establishment hack, he tweeted out, like, because some new polls show that Donald Trump is tied in some polls, up in other polls. So what does he do? He tweets out,
hey, let me show you the polls for Mitt Romney versus Barack Obama. This is about the same time before their election in 2012. And, you know, in the list of polls, Obama's up in most of them, Romney's up in two of them. And so, in other words, the point of the tweet was, like, everybody calm down, there's no problem here. There's no problem! There's no problem! Hillary's nice! Hillary's wonderful!
So instead of actually addressing the fundamental flaws in her campaign and the flaws in her policy positions that might make it so she's not as popular, what do? Just play defense, deflect, obfuscate. There's nothing wrong! There's nothing wrong! There's nothing wrong! There's nothing wrong! Shut the fuck up! Hillary's great! Hillary's wonderful! That's what this is. Bernie! 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 Hillary, 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 like her more. Why don't you fucking like her? Just like her. You should like her already. I'm going to pretend that you like her. Is that cool? Is that cool? No, it's embarrassing and it's pathetic. She needs to be a better candidate and have better policy positions if she wants to generate the same kind of excitement. Stop pretending like she's already great. Stop trying to make her a thing that is more grandiose than it actually is. Okay, more. We're done with that portion of the program, the beat up on Hillary portion of the program.
We have some pretty damning audio here. This is a recording by a New York City officer named Michael Birch. He secretly recorded this in 2012. The supervisor is Captain Konstantin Sakis. And he appeared to scold the officer for not racially profiling black men. So the New York Daily News initially broke this story, and Gawker got the audio. Let's listen to it.
Who commits the crime? Who commits the crime? There's mostly teenagers, anywhere between the ages of 15 and 19, mostly male, blacks, and Hispanics.
Okay. Who are you stopping?
Everybody. I stop everybody.
54 is Taz of the 820.
Mm-hmm.
25 is a female, Taz.
Okay. Like I said, I stop everybody. I'm not targeting anybody. First of all,
you just told me who that guy does.
Yeah, I know that. But there's also other people who are committing violations as well. I'm not saying that there's not violations being made.
Male blacks that you commit the crime.
Plenty of people that I write summonses to are male blacks and male Hispanics.
Not male blacks.
Not for the whole year. And I have... You're telling me for the whole year, I only saw two male blacks for some
820.
No.
January 1st, what was 20? 54 tags, two male blacks, seven Hispanics, seven other, 10 whites, three Asians. So where are you targeting the perps that you just told me?
Well, like I said, if I don't see a perp jumping over the turnstile, what am I supposed to do for them? And I'll say, I'm...
These people have to pop.
How do I know that? A female Hispanic that I thought that she said they did pop actually for a warrant and I arrested her. Female Hispanic. The Hispanics that were supposed to be going up that are committing the crimes. The people that I
think
she's gonna pop. I didn't put no thought into it. If you come up and you're getting and you'll come up on a collar, I'm taking you in.
This is what I see. You describe to me who's committing the crimes, you're fully aware of it. You're not targeting those people.
I'm talking to everybody.
Who male blacks?
Whoever's out there. If I catch...
So you only saw two male blacks jump in turns?
If you're saying that's what's in front of you, then yes, that's all I saw. There's two male blacks rolling your jump in turns off. That's what you're saying is in front of you. I'm not disputing that. You're saying that's what I got there?
That's true. Seven not disputing here.
Well, I'm saying, but we also talked Hispanics as well. I stopped a lot of Hispanics, too.
Seven male Hispanics, but more than half are females.
And like I said, everybody's committing violations in front of me.
All right. Here's why that's so troubling. The officer is telling the supervisor, okay, I arrested people, I went after people who I saw commit a crime, specifically jump over the turnstile. So what that means is that gate thing,
for the subway. You go in and it's one at a time. So some people jump over it. You're committing a crime. You can't do that. So this officer says, I stopped the people who jumped over it and committed a crime. And in some cases, you do a check on them. Oh, this person has a warrant, and then you could arrest that person. The supervisor's mad because this person only stopped two male blacks out of 54 people stopped in a certain time span. It was a month or a few months or something like that. So it was from the beginning of the year to whatever point this happened. So the officer keeps insisting, you only stopped two male blacks. Like, who commits crimes? And then, the response from the officer is, well, statistically, it's male black, male Hispanic, so on and so forth. And then he's like, right. So the supervisor's like, right. So why'd you only stop two male blacks? And the officer's like, because I guess in this case, if you have the numbers in front of you, you tell me. I only saw two male blacks jump the turnstile. Like, what do you want me to do? You just want me to stop random male blacks and fucking arrest them? Or like, what are you saying? He's like, well, you're telling me he was committing the crimes, but you only stopped two of the demographic that's committing the crimes. And the officer's like, but in this case, those statistics did not hold true. There were only two male blacks that committed the crimes. The other people were not male blacks. In fact, half of the people who jumped the turnstile were female. So I went after them because they committed the fucking crime. He's like, yeah, but you only stopped two male blacks. Yeah, but okay, so notice what's happening. The supervisor is saying, I don't care about the reality of the situation and who actually committed the crimes. I'm so wedded to the macro statistics that it's going to be all confirmation bias, and I'm going to look to try to meet those statistics in reality. So if on a macro level, male blacks and male Hispanics commit more crimes, I want you to arrest more male blacks and more Hispanics no matter what. So even if the statistics totally change and in a given month more white males, for example, commit crimes, they're like, I don't care. Target the male blacks, target the male Hispanics. See, this is the problem. It becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. And this is what we've spoken about endlessly on the show. Like, and I have an interesting perspective on this because I grew up in Neuchâtel, New York, very diverse. And whenever you went to, parties in high school in the north end of Neuchâtel, which is the more white, affluent end of Neuchâtel, you could literally get away with anything. So at one of my friends' parties, you could do cake stands in the front lawn, smoke weed out in the open. There could be hundreds of people, super loud in this suburban area. Okay, that friend literally lived next to a judge. Never had the cops called on us. Never. Literally do keg stands on the lawn, smoke weed out in the open, people fucking in bushes. Crazy, debauchery. Never had any problems. Now you go to the south end of Neuchâtel, you could be minding your business, smoking weed on the front porch. Fucking cops roll up, tackle you, boom, you got a record, your life is done. Much harder to get a job, you go into prison, you unfortunately become hardened by the system, it doesn't rehabilitate anything, you just become more hardened. So look at what happens, when you only police blacks and Hispanics, shocker, you're going to find more crimes there. It's like with stop and frisk. How many Wall Street bankers got a stop and frisk? How many had it? That's a serious question, how many had it? I mean, what, you don't think some of them have illegal pills on them, cocaine, but they're not busting them. They're not busting them because they have power. Because you're a white male with a suit and tie, so I'm going to get involved with that. Let me go target some young black people or young Hispanic people. So it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. You over-police certain areas, and then you find more crimes in those areas. Then the statistics show male blacks, male Hispanics commit more crimes. Yeah, but you only focused on those areas. So you see what happens? And it even is so ridiculous now, it's at the point where the officer is literally telling the supervisor, I stopped everybody who committed a crime. Whatever, for this month or whatever it was, only two of 54 were black males. And the officer's like, you need to stop more black males. Well, then this is exactly what the black community has been complaining about for years, and they're right. And they're right. And look, I got more for you, because you could say, well, this is just one case. Maybe that doesn't really generalize. Okay, you ready for this? With stop and frisk, there was a glaring problem. Quote, an independent study of the city's stop and frisk program found that 87% of the 686,000 stops in 2011, a record high, were blacks and Latinos. Young black men between the ages of 14 and 24 were stopped 106% of the time, as in there were more stops of young black men than the entire population of young black men. Stop and Frisk had a 90% failure rate in 2011, and in the first 3 months of 2013, when the number of stops fell by 51% from the same period last year, the crime rate dropped. Okay, understand that. Let me explain exactly what that means. Okay, there were more stops of black males than there are black males in the city. So they're all experiencing it. They all know what it's like to be targeted by the cops. Now, this is where people turn around and they go, yeah, but they deserved it. They deserved it, that you're targeting them because they commit more crimes. 90% failure rate. 90% failure rate. And then when they stopped doing them and when the numbers fell, crime also fell. So it's not like it's stopping crime. We have the evidence. It's not stopping crime. Okay, and then also, a study by the city's own public advocate found that stops of white people were twice as likely to yield a weapon and a third more likely to yield some form of contraband as compared to stops of black people. Now, understand, that's not because white people commit more crime and are just more guilty. That's not what that means. It's because the cops are more likely to treat the white people as humans and view them as individuals, not as a collective group. So they see them, and they internalize the statistics like we just spoke about in this clip that I played for you. And they go, well, they commit less of the crime, so let's just stop them less often. So when they do happen to stop them, they think, oh, no, I think something's really off with this guy. Because they look at his actions as opposed to just his profile. And then with black people, it's just, no, just stop them because they generally fit the profile. So, okay, just stop them. Even to the point where an officer could tell the supervisor, they didn't commit the crimes for me in this instance. Only two of the 54 were black males. And the officer's like, yeah, but you got to stop the black males because they commit the crimes. I'm telling you, they didn't commit the crimes in this instance. But you got to stop more black males. So they forgot the question. The answer is stop black males. And you wonder why the black community feels like they're living under police occupation. And you wonder why the black community gets mad at law enforcement. Well, perhaps they're not all just complainers and it's based on absolutely nothing. Perhaps there's a little something to it and we should all understand it. Okay. All right, let me continue, and I'm going to go to Boris Johnson out of nowhere. Boris Johnson is, of course, a lead Brexiter, and he's Britain's new foreign secretary. So he's been described by some as Britain's Trump, and he certainly looks like him, but perhaps even his politics are somewhat in alignment with Donald Trump. So before I continue here, let me just say that because he was for Brexit does not mean that I'm maligning others who are for Brexit. So I feel like there's a lot of stereotyping and a caricature of people that are for Brexit as like, ah, they're all racist and they're all xenophobes and they're all bigots. No. I'm sure some, sure. But there was also a very populist left-wing argument for Brexit. And, you know, more sovereignty, more independence, you could almost argue is inherently good. So going down that road, despite short-term economic consequences, you know, it's something that's certainly a debatable proposition, and it's not like if you're for Brexit, by definition, you are a bad person, you're a right-winger, you're this or that, yada yada. So let me be clear about that up front. But Boris Johnson was an interesting choice for foreign secretary, since he apparently is not too fond of foreigners. So he had this brilliant thought for us in the early 2000s in a piece he wrote. This is about colonialism. He said, the continent may be a blot, he's talking about Africa here, but it is not a blot upon our conscience. The problem is not that we were once in charge, but that we are not in charge anymore. The best fate for Africa would be if the old colonial powers or their citizens scrambled once again in her direction, on the understanding that this time they will not be asked to feel guilty. Oh, yes, you have nothing to feel guilty about. Nothing, 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 you precious little butterfly, you. Okay, I didn't say it, he said it. He said, the problem is not that we were once in charge, but that we are not in charge anymore. So colonialism, awesome. British Empire, tremendous. All right, so that's cute. A little nostalgia for the Empire. But let's go ahead and review the British Empire and see what actually went down. So during the Second Boer War in the year 1900, they set up concentration camps. That's nice. Over 100,000 people were put in them. Nearly 30,000 people died. There was the Amritsar Massacre in India, where they slaughtered 1,000 protesters, unprovoked. There was the partitioning of India and the creation of Pakistan. This is a very, very important historical event. 10 million people were uprooted, and up to 1 million people were killed in sectarian violence. There was also the Mau Mau Uprising. This, of course, is in Africa. This is Kenya. Up to 100,000 Kenyans were killed, raped, and tortured in Britain's gulags, as they were called. You have nothing to feel guilty about. The problem is not that you're gone. The problem is that you're not there anymore. We got to go back to Kenya. 100,000 killed, raped, tortured, Britain's gulag. But we did it, so it's cool. Our crimes don't count. Then there's the famine in India. This is perhaps the worst because, listen to this, The Independent reports here, between 12 and 29 million Indians died of starvation while it was under the control of the British Empire. Okay, now here you could say, but yeah, but they can't control famine. Wait for it. As millions of tons of wheat were exported to Britain as famine raged in India. You see what they did? There's a famine. There's very little food. They go, these people are savages anyway. Just jack all the food. And then 12 to 29 million people starved to death as a direct result of those actions. Oh, my God. Wow. And there's always the massive irony of, and Winston Churchill had some quotes like this too, of like, yeah, but they're savages. The irony, we need a word stronger than irony to describe this level of irony. Because as you call them savages, you jack all their food during a famine and watch them starve to death. Pretty sure in that scenario, you would be the fucking savage. You are not, by definition, the good guy because your skin is white. But many of them seem to believe that. And then finally, the BBC continues here. During the last 20 years of the 19th century, Britain occupied or annexed Egypt, the Sudan, British East Africa, which is now Kenya and Uganda, British Somaliland, southern and northern Rhodesia, which of course is now Zimbabwe and Zambia, Botswana, South Africa, Gambia, Sierra Leone, Nigeria, the British Gold Coast, which is now Ghana, and Malawi. These countries accounted for more than 30% of Africa's population. Britain left behind many mass graves and destroyed records of all the brutality it had incurred at the hands of the African people. Wow. Wow. So, here you have this idiot. He's like, the problem isn't that we did colonialism. The problem is that we stopped colonialism. The problem isn't the end of the British Empire. Well, the problem isn't the British Empire, excuse me. The problem is the end of the British Empire. To me, this sounds quite a bit like, you know, an apologist for Andrew Jackson, if you will. Like, what do you mean? Yeah, we did the Indian Removal Act and we did the Trail of Tears. There was a Native American genocide. But it was the right thing to do. I mean, the problem wasn't that we did it. It's that we're not doing it anymore. Really, really a shitty argument and a really tribal argument, which is, of course, hilarious because these guys fancy themselves to be above that. We're not like the savages. We're not like the tribalists. That is a through-and-through tribalist argument of, well, our empire was great. Our colonialism was great because we were in charge. Well, if you actually look at what you fucking did, much of it was a disaster, if not outright genocide. Okay. And finally, last story of the day. Last story of the week, I should say. We have a pretty clear case of discrimination here against atheists, Raw Story reports. A Kentucky county judge refused to officiate a couple's wedding after they requested he respect their lack of religious beliefs. Trigg County Judge Hollis Alexander confirmed that he turned away Mandy Heath and her fiancé when Heath went to file the necessary paperwork at the local courthouse on the day before their wedding. Quote, I will be unable to perform your wedding ceremony. I include God in my ceremonies, and I won't do one without. So these guys are like, what? But we're atheists, and we want to get married. And this isn't a church. You're a judge. This is the government. You can't say, because I disagree with your marriage, I'm not going to do it. But you're not a church. You're the government. You're the government. So you're just approving our marriage. We're two atheists. We want to get married. You have to do it. They're like, he's like, oh, no, I'm not going to do it. Because I think atheism is wrong. I believe in God, and I put God in all my ceremonies. So I'm not doing it. I'm not going to marry atheists. We could use a little bit of outrage here, please. Like, we rightly get super outraged when gays are denied marriage rights. We should. We obviously would get outraged if it was. Can you imagine today an interracial couple, and they're like, we're going to get married. And somebody who represents the government is like, no, I'm against interracial marriage. Get the fuck out. There'd be headlines everywhere. Rightfully so. There should be, too. But when it's atheists, I don't know. It's just there's not, like, people aren't like, oh, my God, you're fucking refusing to marry atheists because you disagree with atheism. Fuck off. It's not your choice. It's their fucking choice. I need outrage. Everybody, wake the fuck up. Discrimination against atheists is discrimination. This is discrimination. There's 7 states in the U.S. where on the state law books they say, yeah, we don't let atheists run for office. Now, that's unconstitutional at a federal level, and federal law overrides state law, so let me be clear about that. You can run if you're an atheist in the different states. But the fact that the language is on the books and nobody's scrambling to change it shows something about the casual, nonchalant discrimination against atheists, where nobody's mobilized and they're like, no, seriously, get that fucking off the books. Imagine if it still was casually on the books, like, yeah, no, interracial marriage, ban it. If that was still on the books, people would say, you're removing that right now. This is racism through and through. But it's not anti-atheist bigotry when in 7 state law books it says we don't let these kinds of people, these bad people, run for office. Fuck you. Fuck you. We're normal people. We just don't believe in fucking fairy tales and Narnia and The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe and Harry Potter and bullshit mysticism. We believe in science and reason and rationality. You obviously don't because you're denying us our rights. Stop restricting atheist rights because you disagree with them. That makes you a bigot, that makes you a bad person, and we need to change this stuff and get more mobilized and outraged when shit like this happens. All right, guys, I'm out of time. I love you. We'll see you back here on Monday. Everybody enjoy your weekend. Mwah! Peace.